People react to this time of year in different ways. Some people are frantic, buying presents, trying to get things done. Other people sort of go the opposite direction. I saw somebody with a sweatshirt on that said, "I'm with Scrooge." And I thought the story behind that must be a really good story, but I didn't know the person and wasn't sure that I should just walk up to them and ask them about it. But I thought it sounded really good. And some people, well, also you have, I guess another reaction to it is what I would call kind of sentimental in the sense of people who don't seem to spend much time, at least on the surface, don't spend much time thinking about God or about Jesus Christ during the rest of the year, think about him at this time, or at least musical stars put out Christmas albums, although very often it seems like their lives contradict the album they've put out. But for some of the rest of us, it's one more opportunity just to think about the place of Jesus in our lives. And it's not just a passing thing that comes once a year, but it's an ongoing process with us. And something that has struck me in the New Testament that I want to talk about this morning, and that is, have you ever noticed, and I didn't for the longest time, but have you ever noticed how many times in the gospel accounts that it says that the people were amazed or astonished or marveled, surprised in some way at what Jesus did? Actually, it appears some 30 times plus in the Gospels where it talks about people being amazed at what Jesus was doing. And when I went back and started looking at those and thinking about other passages that relate to them, I found myself being amazed too. I also thought of the words of Erasmus, who was the great Renaissance scholar who gave us an edition of the Greek New Testament. And in the preface to that New Testament, he wrote the following words, which I find very moving. "These holy pages will sum up the living image of his mind. They will give you Christ himself, talking, healing, dying, raising, the whole Christ in a word. They will give him to you in an intimacy so close that he would be less visible to you if he stood before your eyes." That was Erasmus's reflection on reading the Greek Testament. And so, when I think about Jesus, who was the most amazing man who has ever lived, I mean, I notice the following things. His teachings were amazing. Earlier we heard Matthew 7, verses 28 and 29, which come at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. 5, 6, and 7 of Matthew, Jesus gives this wonderful sermon, and at the end of it, it said when he had finished these things, saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one having authority and not as their teachers of the law. It helps to understand what the teachers of the law were like. The teachers of the law quoted other teachers of the law. That's just the way they interpreted things and the way they taught. So they would say, "Rabbi so-and-so said this, and Rabbi so-and-so said that." And there was this long, in their view, especially among the scribes and the Pharisees, there was this long chain of interpretation going back to the time of Ezra. And so the authority for this teaching was to quote other teachers. Jesus didn't quote other teachers. He was the teacher, the perfect teacher, but he spoke with authority. a modern day rabbi in Oklahoma, in the U.S., read the Sermon on the Mount, and after he read the Sermon on the Mount, he said Jesus was the greatest rabbi who ever lived, and the Jews of his day were fools for not following him. Isn't that quite amazing? It's because his teaching is so absolutely amazing. In other places, such as Mark 1, Jesus is teaching in the synagogues, and again it says the people were amazed. In Mark 6, Jesus has gone to his hometown, and he's teaching there. And in verse 2, it says that the people there were amazed at his teaching. Now, interestingly, they were amazed, but they rejected it. They were amazed because how can this hometown boy, we saw him grow up. We know his mom. We know his brothers. We know his sisters. Maybe they didn't mention his father because who they would have seen as being his father, perhaps, because he was probably dead by then, Joseph. But anyway, they acknowledged wisdom that was just beyond normal, and that and even miracles. They mentioned miracles, and yet they rejected him. And in verse 6, which is an unusual statement, it says that Jesus was also amazed. He was amazed at their unbelief. They could see the wisdom, they could see the teachings and reject it. And he found it amazing. Or in Mark 11, 18, the crowds around Jesus are amazed at what he is teaching, and the priests fear him. In John chapter 7, the high priests send out temple guards to arrest Jesus, and the guards come back empty-handed. And when they ask them why, they said, "We never heard anybody who taught like this." Sometimes we can become so used to what Jesus is, so used to what he said and what he did, that we can begin to lose a sense of how truly amazing it is. His teachings are unlike the teachings of anyone. That's not to say there aren't certain parallels, but you take it as a whole, and they're just beyond anything else any other teachers taught. And when you think about the kinds of things he taught, not only did he teach with authority, but he taught things that are hard to believe. And yet he gave proof for them. I mean, for instance, he taught that he was God in the flesh, God become man. He usually did it indirectly; he implied it rather than stating it. But it was there through what he did, through what he said. That was the only logical deduction. One of the and another unbelievable thing that he did was he before he died, he said that he was going to die. He told them how it was going to happen, basically, and that he was going to be raised from the dead. Now, again, we may be so used to that that we may not really think about how really amazing that is. Suppose you had a friend who was perfectly sane, as best you knew. Sort of like a friend of my wife sent her a card once that said to my one sane friend, or shall we pretend? Let's say you had a friend who you knew to be perfectly sane and who told you that they expected to die at a certain time in a certain way, and then in 3 days they'd be raised from the dead. What would you make of it? Well, I thought he was sane, but obviously he's not. But suppose then he actually did come back from the dead. Or other things that Jesus taught that are absolutely amazing, if you think about it, especially as they have an impact on the way we live our lives. In Luke chapter 6, Jesus talks about loving our enemies. Really? Love my enemies? not just love the ones that annoy me a little bit. That's hard enough. But love the enemies. It talks about if somebody strikes you on one cheek, turn the other one. Really? Loan, not expecting repayment. Or how about in Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, on the face of it, that sounds good, except that's not the way most of us live, is it? The golden rule, according to us, is do unto others as they do unto you. Isn't it? You treat me well, I'll treat you well. You treat me badly, I'll treat you badly. Or maybe I'll just ignore you. I won't treat you any way at all. I'll just pretend you don't exist. Or how about this? In Mark 10, verses 41 through 45, two of Jesus' disciples come wanting to get one step beyond all the other disciples. When Jesus comes into his kingdom, which they believe is coming, he's going to make this power move. He's going to drive out the Romans, and he's going to set up a kingdom. And when the kingdom's set up, they want to be on his right hand and his left hand, the places of power next to the throne. And Jesus uses that as an opportunity to say to them, the great one among you will be the servant of the others. Really? Do we really believe that? I mean, that's amazing. And Jesus ends the teaching in verse 45 by saying, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's pretty amazing stuff. Or how about when Jesus says in Matthew 16:24, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. That's not exactly the way we would think to win followers. The way to win followers is to make it easy, convenient. And he does the very opposite, and it's very amazing. But not only were his teachings amazing, but his miracles were amazing. He cast out demons. We don't have much experience with demon possession in the sense that they had it, at least. But it was a terrifying event in the ancient world and in the lives of these people, that demons would actually inhabit someone and control them to some degree. And Jesus would cast those demons out. Or he had power over disease. Again, we may be so used to that, the idea of Jesus healing sick people, that we don't really think about it so much anymore. But he healed people who couldn't walk. He healed the blind. He healed lepers. Whatever your aches and pains are, suppose someone were to come up to you and say, you're healed, and it just immediately goes away. That's pretty amazing. He had not only power over disease, but power over nature. On one occasion, in a violent storm, Jesus told the wind and the waves to just hush up and quiet down, and they did. That's something you would expect to see in a movie, a comedy. Nobody can do that, right? Wrong. Jesus did. And in Matthew 8, when that happened, they were amazed. And their question was, who is this that even the winds and the waves obey? Or in another case, in Mark 6, Jesus walks on the water. Literally walks on the water. And that's pretty amazing, don't you think? It would come in very handy at times in my life if I could have walked on water, but it's never worked too well for me. How about you? Not only that, but he had power over death. A man by the name of Jairus' daughter died in Mark 5, and Jesus just spoke to her and woke her up. But she wasn't asleep. She was dead. Or in another one, in Luke 7, Jesus is coming to a village by the name of Nain. And as he's coming to the village, a funeral procession is coming out. The only son of a widow has died. And Jesus goes up to the coffin and says, "Get up." And the boy did. That's amazing. If we could just put ourselves there, it's not just Bible stories anymore. Think of yourself being there, seeing this. Or in John chapter 11, Lazarus, Jesus' good friend, has been dead and in the grave for 4 days. And Jesus comes, and in John, if you look at it, you find it was calculated. He could have been there sooner. He delayed. He delayed so that it would be 4 days. The reason is the Jews believed that after three days, the spirit of a dead person would hover around the body. But after that, they were gone. You might raise somebody from the dead for the first 3 days, but after 3 days, they were gone. And Jesus waits for four and comes and raises Lazarus from the dead. In that old classic, The Greatest Story Ever Told, the scene in that entire movie that was most striking to me was the raising of Lazarus. Because they portrayed it so well, the utter amazement of the people as Lazarus comes out of the tomb. So Jesus had power even over death. Not only that, but not only did he have... was he amazing in his teachings and miracles, but also he was amazing in the way he controlled every situation. When you read the Gospels, you get the feeling that Jesus is in complete control. It's not just that he's the unquestioned leader, it's that in every situation, he is the one. He's the central figure, and he's the one who's in control of the situation. It's as if the whole thing were a play that he's already read, and he knows each line, and he knows the end of the story. And that explains why he, in his debates with the Pharisees and Sadducees, he always comes out on top. You know, when I was a kid and reading these stories about Pharisees and Sadducees, I came to the conclusion that these guys weren't too bright. Okay? They always come out looking bad in the Gospels. And somehow in my head, I just came to the conclusion that these guys were kind of dumb, and that Jesus took advantage of them. But then I got to looking at them more closely. They weren't dumb at all. They were a sharp group. They would at times ask Jesus questions that, except for him, had no good answer. Like, should we pay taxes to Caesar? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? On the face of it, I mean, if somebody said, is it lawful to pay taxes to the Canadian government, that would be easy enough for us to answer. Probably. But in their society, that was a deadly question. From their standpoint, there was no good answer. If he said, yes, it's lawful to pay taxes to Caesar, all the Jews would be mad at him and would accuse him of disloyalty to God and to Israel because the Romans were oppressors. Some of my students have sometimes called me an oppressor. I don't think that's totally fair, but anyway, the Romans were oppressors. So if you say, yeah, pay taxes to them, they would accuse you of being disloyal. On the other hand, if you say, no, don't pay taxes to them, that'd make the Romans kind of annoyed. And the Romans did bad things to you when they got annoyed. It wasn't a good thing to annoy them. They would have seen him as a rebel, as an insurrectionist. There's no good answer. Jesus asks to see the coin, asks whose image is on the coin. It's Caesar's image on the coin. And he says, then give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. What's he saying? Caesar gave you the money. It's Caesar's money that pays for the troops that you may not like, but they do keep you from being invaded by other people. It's Caesar's money that keeps the seas free for trade. The Romans swept the seas of pirates. It's the one that builds the roads. Remember the saying, all roads lead to Rome. And not only built the roads, but kept them safe. There are a lot of advantages to being in the Roman Empire, so give to Caesar what is Caesar's. He gave you the money, so just give him his money back. But give to God what is God's. And what is God's? Everything. Your whole life. All your loyalty. Everything. It's a brilliant answer. And he does that time and time again. Some of that comes out, by the way, in a number of places where Jesus answers what his opponents were thinking. Not what they were saying, what they were thinking. So how do you debate with somebody like that? How would you like to be in a debate with somebody like that? Or just have them around knowing what you're thinking? It's amazing. And when he comes down to the end of his life and it looks like it's out of control, there's still the sense that it's in his control. He predicts his death. He expects it. He predicts being betrayed. He predicts that his disciples will run away. He predicts that he's going to be tried, abused, and die. Pilate, the Roman official, was totally amazed by Jesus because rather than frantically trying to save himself, Jesus said the bare minimum. Still in control. Also, his spiritual life was amazing. To some people, this wouldn't seem like much, but if you've spent your life looking for God and trying to live close to God, then Jesus' spiritual life is absolutely amazing. His closeness to the Father, he says, the Father and I are one. He calls God Abba, Father, in Mark 14. Abba's Aramaic for father, and the father there is Greek, so it's used, there's two different languages that's being used there, and Abba is a family term, something like daddy. It's an affectionate, an intimate term that he's using there. His prayer life was amazing. A lot of us probably would admit that however good our prayer lives are, that they're not as good as we wish they were. And here you've got Jesus who prays for hours on end, sometimes all night. And we may struggle sometimes just with a few minutes. Amazing. His obedience throughout life and even to death is amazing. I mean, again, we may struggle with always being obedient or even wanting to be obedient at times. And Jesus saw it all laid out before him that he was going to die, and he embraces it out of obedience, because he wants to do the will of God. His purity, his holiness, his humility, his service, all of those things. All of those things are absolutely amazing. And finally, his love is amazing. And I don't think their world was so different than ours that so often there's a lack of genuine love. People put conditions on love. I will love you if. If you behave the way I want you to, if you do what I like, if you'll be the person I want you to be, then I will love you. Or sometimes love becomes manipulative. If you loved me, you would just fill in the blank. But that says, I'm controlling is really what it says. But Jesus didn't love in any of those ways. His love was with no strings attached. It was a love that only wanted the best for the other person. He loved good people, easy to love. He loved bad people, very hard to love. He not only taught us to love our enemies, but he loved them. On the cross, Luke 23:34, he prayed for his enemies. Prayed that God would forgive them while they were putting him to death. That's pretty amazing. Forgive them? These sinful, hateful people. His love caused him to touch the untouchable in their society, or even in ours. In Mark 1:41, Jesus was confronted with a man who had leprosy, which is in their world and ours, it's not only a terrible disease, but in their world, it really meant you were part of the untouchables. Nobody wanted to be around a leper. It was fearful, and among the Jews, it was they were to be quarantined. They weren't to be in regular society. Terrible, contagious disease. And he's confronted with this leper, and he reaches out and touches him. It may have been the only time the man had been touched for years. And Jesus did it. And wonder of wonders, he loves me. When I match my life to his, it doesn't match up too well. And in the words of the old song, I stand amazed in the presence of Jesus the Nazarene and wonder how he could love me, a sinner, condemned, unclean. Oh, how marvelous, oh, how wonderful, and my song shall ever be. But there it is. He loves us not only when we're very good, but also when we're very bad, and he looks out for our best interest. Loving us, there's no manipulation, there are no strings attached. He loves us. Now, he loves us so much that he wants us to be with him. He wants us to obey him, but he loves us regardless. He loves us even if we reject him and head to destruction. He will still love us. And in some ways, that's the most amazing thing of all, that he loves us no matter what. He loves us just as we are, but he also loves us too much to leave us that way. And his love has a way of transforming us. And we're transformed not so that he will love us, but it is his transforming love that changes us. So, as you go about your day, spend some time just thinking about Jesus, how amazing he is, and allow that amazement to draw you to him. Like a magnet. Would you bow with me for a prayer? Our Father in heaven, we thank you. We thank you that in the Lord Jesus Christ, you came into the world and you came in the greatest rescue mission to rescue people like us. Father, help us. Help us to respond to this rescue mission, to respond to your love for us. Help us, Father, to stand back in amazement at who you are and what you have done in Jesus. In his name we pray. Amen.